Welcome to Political Hitman on Israel News Talk Radio. Want to connect with Howie? Email him at howie@israelnewstalkradio.com. Now here's your host, Howie Silberger.
I've been thinking all day. How do I approach this subject? How do I talk about the capitulation of a once strong nation? How do I talk about my conflicted feelings about trading hostages for terrorists? It's a very sad time. It's very, very sad to see where Israel has ended up. Many people are very happy, including Arabs, about this deal that Israel made with a terrorist organization that they vowed to destroy. Many people are thrilled about this. But I can't help but think about the last, or at least last couple of hostage for terrorist trades that Israel has agreed to. Remember the one from Gilad Shalit, where Yahya Sinwar was released from prison and then went on to orchestrate the October 7th massacre. I remember the mayor of Hebron, who was released in exchange for Gilad Shalit. And he was responsible for killing innocent men, including my cousin, during an attack in 1980 in Hebron. One has to wonder, why? Why trade murderers with blood on their hands for hostages? You're sending two separate messages when you do that. The first message you're sending is that your military was not able to complete their job. Part of the deal is that the military has to withdraw from Gaza with Hamas still intact, which means that your military has not completed the job. Second message you're sending is that it's okay for anyone to grab a hostage from Israel, and Israel will capitulate and bow and give in to the demands of the hostage takers. It's extortion. But Israel voluntarily became a victim of extortion. They chose to be a victim. It's extremely sad that a once mighty nation has fallen to the point where they are negotiating with terrorists. Remember, years ago, the mantra of Israel, the mantra of most countries, was we don't negotiate with terrorists. We don't negotiate with terrorists. We kill terrorists. That's what we do. We don't negotiate. We kill them. We go where they are, and we destroy them. And if that costs us lives, that's a sacrifice we have to make in order to ensure that the terrorists don't have the upper hand. That was always the mantra. That was always the idea. When terrorists came, you took care of them. But Israel backed down. As they have in the past, they set the precedent years ago that if you take Israeli hostages, you won't be destroyed. Israel will deal for the hostages. Now, I understand the concept of saving lives, and I understand the pressure put onto the government by the families of the hostages. And I understand the unbelievable Sophie's choice that Israel had. Give up the hostages to destroy the terrorists, or give in to the terrorists to save the hostages. I get it. I understand the ramifications of both decisions and how difficult it was for the Israeli government to come up with some kind of idea of what to do. It just feels wrong. It feels dirty. It feels like we've lost. I want the hostages to come home as much as anybody else. I want families to be reunited. I want people to be able to bury their dead. I want closure for the mothers and the fathers and the brothers and the sisters that have people stuck in terror tunnels in Gaza. I'm a big advocate of freeing the hostages. But at what price? At what cost? One of the hostages being released was the man who killed our friend Ari Fold, who was a host on this radio station. And his crime was going shopping, going to a grocery store. That was his crime. Being Jewish, going to a grocery store on Jewish land. He paid the ultimate price for that. And his killer is being set free. It is unfathomable that we release people with blood on their hands. Years ago, when these negotiations happened, it was always, we'll release people who don't have blood on their hands. And then with Gilad Shalit, it changed. And then we were releasing people with blood on their hands. And now we're releasing murderers. People who killed for fun. Alan Dershowitz, the noted civil rights lawyer, stated that this is an extortion. This is any government that gives up to terrorists, that makes a deal with terrorists, is being extorted. But the extortion doesn't come from the terrorists. It comes from the media and it comes from the Western civilizations and Western governments, who have somehow put the terrorists on the same level as the country, that somehow recognized the terrorists as legitimate negotiation partners, which they should never have been recognized as. A terrorist is a terrorist, not a government. There are no governments that are terrorists. There are no legitimate terrorists. There are no people who are terrorists that should be negotiated with. Yet somehow, Hamas has managed through propaganda or through whatever to ensure that they're viewed as a legitimate governmental source that could be negotiated with. The media quotes Hamas spokespeople all the time, quoting numbers of people killed, which were all fabricated. It's obvious they're fabricated, but they quote them as if they're the gospel. Excuse the expression. It just seems so undermined and so unfathomable. And I know I keep repeating that word, but I can't come up with another word on the feeling that I have on how unbelievable it is that a government would get to its knees to a terrorist organization, bow to its knees, drop to its knees, and beg a terrorist organization to release their people. Hundreds of soldiers have been killed in this war against Hamas. And now their deaths, their legacies, have been cheapened by the State of Israel. Hundreds of soldiers have been injured. Their legacy has been cheapened by the State of Israel. And they're cheapened because, what did they fight for? They went in there to fight, to destroy, to annihilate Hamas. They went in there to free the hostages. And yes, we know the mission has failed, that they weren't able to free all the hostages. And yes, we know that Hamas is still ruling Gaza from underground bunkers. And yes, we know that Israel tried to do the humane thing. But maybe they were wrong. Maybe strategically they were wrong. maybe Israel should have done what they should have done and not the right thing. I mean, they should have done what they were accused of doing. Perhaps that was the solution. Maybe Israel should have gone into Gaza and just leveled the entire region, destroyed everything. Maybe Israel should have, I don't know, I can't even make a suggestion because I'm so distraught by this deal. I'm so distraught by this horrific deal. Knowing that Israel has set up their citizenship for further hostage takings and further pain and suffering in the hands of Hamas. Remember years ago, there were soldiers that were kidnapped and killed, and Israel would negotiate. And it would be a negotiation. We're not going to give you a terrorist. We'll give you somebody that we're holding that's not a terrorist, that never killed anybody. Maybe they plotted terrorism, but they have to leave Israel. The terrorists that are being released in this hostage deal are being put right back into Israeli populations. They're going back to Tel Aviv. They're going back to Judea and Samaria. They're going back to Jerusalem. They're being released back into the wild, not tracked, not being held accountable for their crimes, free to commit crimes again, free to go and kill more Jews. This is a dangerous precedent that Israel has set, and it is horrifically bad. Now, there are lefties who are trying to spin this in some kind of a positive light, that yes, we're getting our hostages back by the end of the deal in 48 days or 3 months, we'll have everybody back, dead or alive. All the hostages will be returned to Israel. And it's true. For the families, it is a great deal. It is a sign of celebration. But nobody on the Israeli side was celebrating. When you watch the videos, there were no celebrations on the Israeli side. I think even the families of the people, although relieved that their loved ones were coming home, we're very, very, very aware that this was a very bad deal. But on the Arab side, there were plenty of celebrations, celebrations everywhere. Arabs were throwing parties across the world, celebrating the capitulation of the Zionist entity, as they called it, celebrating the loss of the war for Israel. This is what the celebrations were about. They were handing out candies. In every major city in the world, they had celebrations, celebratory rallies, congratulating Hamas for their victory. The Arabs have won. They won the war. The Jewish state lost. They raised the white flag. Now, maybe we could spin this in a more positive light. Maybe we could say sometimes it's worth losing in order to win. Sometimes you got to lose in order to win. So you give up something and you gain something. But what is Israel gaining here? They're not gaining positive light in the world stage. The three women who were released as hostages were in relatively good health. They were kept in relatively good health. So Israel's not gaining in world stature here. So what else could they possibly be gaining by signing this deal? Netanyahu will keep his government for another few months. They won't overthrow him yet. It's coming, but it's not going to happen yet. The right wing of the party walked out and left the government. They resigned their positions. What else do you gain? A weaker coalition? The world looking at you like you lost the war and like you have no more strength in you? And the Arabs laughing at you because your show of might was for nothing. Israel's reputation took a huge hit with this deal, this hostage deal. And it's such a shame. Now, many will argue that they had no choice, that they were pushed into a corner and they really had no choice at all on whether or not to accept a deal, whether or not to, they had to get the hostages back. But I said it before on the show, and I'm not afraid to say it again, and I actually meant it when I said it the first time. I think that at the beginning, on October 7th, Israel should have gone in and flattened Gaza. Regardless if they killed the hostages or didn't kill the hostages. The hostages are a pawn. They're a political pawn in a game of chess. And Israel should have annihilated the game. Now, sometimes collateral damage happens, and that's very unfortunate. And Israel would have survived killing all the hostages if they would have destroyed Hamas at the time. And that was the time to do it. And Israel always seems to miss that opportunity. We're always too cautious. We always don't want to be compared to the Nazis or be compared to some kind of radical regime. And so Israel always holds back. When any other country would go forward full steam, Israel pulls back. They're afraid of the Americans. They're afraid of the Russians. They're afraid of everybody. And being so afraid on the world stage weakens the country. In 1967, Israel had a decisive victory over the Arabs. And at that point, in 1967, they could have expelled every single Arab out of the country. They could have thrown them out, sent them packing somewhere else, and nobody would have said a word. They could have retaken the Temple Mount, which they did. They could have dismantled the mosques on the Temple Mount, and nobody would have said a word. The world would have been quiet. Israel won the war. And people who have the spoils of war get to do what they want to do with the spoils of war. But when Israel handed the keys to the Temple Mount back to Jordan and gave the Waqf the keys to the Temple Mount, and then started negotiating to return land to countries they conquered land from, this showed an unbelievable inherent inbred weakness in the country. And we are suffering from that ever since. We are suffering from the Camp David Accords. Still today, that weakness still exists. It was magnified 100 million percent by the Oslo Accords in 1993. And it continues to trickle down from generation to generation, from government to government. This inherent weakness that we have to be afraid of everybody, that Israel has to cower in a corner. And everybody could extort them from the International Criminal Court to the United States, to the United Nations, to every other Arab country and every two-bit terrorist group out there. They could take whatever they want and they could extort Israel in any way they want. And Israel just has to bow and say thank you. Sometimes you wonder, does it pay to continue with this state of Israel? Does it pay to continue having the state of Israel exist? You wonder. It's a question you have to ask. If Israel is going to be the kicking ball of the Middle East, which it has been for the last 50 years at least, does it pay to continue? At one time, Israel was a feared state. They were the strongest army in the Middle East. They had the strongest intelligence service. The Mossad was a feared organization. But in recent years, it's become a joke. And there are many reasons for that. I heard a few years ago, there was a speaker that came to speak at some convention I was at, and I don't remember who the speaker was, but he gave a great analogy. Well, a great explanation, at least. It wasn't even an analogy. It was a great explanation to why Israel's so weak. This was 20 years ago. He said, think about general humans. When you're poor and you have the threat of living in a box on the corner, then you work your butt off to earn enough money to have a nice nest egg, to buy a house, to be able to survive and to be able to pay rent or buy a house and eat. And you work as many jobs as you have to work. You do what you have to do in order to ensure that you are living comfortably. But once you're living comfortably, and once you're making a decent living, you land a decent job and you're making a decent living, that fire inside you to survive, that survival fire that drove you to get you to the point where you're at, disappears. Once Israel became a prosperous nation, once Israel built a military that was described as the best military in the Middle East and the strongest military in the Middle East, once Israel got to the point where they believed that they were the strongest, most economic, the highest GDP in the area, once they believed that they were self-sufficient and that they were able to do it and that they didn't have to fight for their survival anymore, they were pretty secure in their survival, they became apathetic. And apathy is what kills countries. Apathy is what kills people. So when you become apathetic, what happens? This political, radical political organization starts up in the 1980s. Let them say what they want. Let them do what they want. Our military could always crush them. We have no problem. If we want to put them down today, it's like an addict. If I want to quit today, I could quit today. And I you don't have to ask me tomorrow. I could quit today. And the Israeli military believed the same thing. If we want to put down Hamas today, we could put them down today, we could put down tomorrow. Hamas is never going to outgrow us. The Hamas is never going to be stronger than us. The Hamas is never going to defeat us. And so the apathy just grew from generation to generation, from government to government. The apathy just grew. And as terror receded, after Arafat's death and after the Second Intifada, terrorism receded. Israel built the terror wall, separating Jews from Arabs in most of the country. And after building that wall, terrorism went down almost 90%. And when Israel started seeing terrorism going down and their GDP going up and their industries blooming and thriving, they forgot that they're still fighting for their survival. They forgot that almost 100 years after the founding of the country, they're still fighting for recognition. Forget about survival. They're just fighting to be recognized as a state. They forgot that the United Nations was against them and has been against them since 1948. They forgot that nobody in the region likes them, regardless if they sign a peace treaty with them or not. Nobody in the region really likes them. Nobody in the region really wants them to be there. When they signed the Abraham Accords and made peace with the United Arab Emirates, I had a couple of friends who said to me, hey, let's go to the United Arab Emirates. Let's just go visit. And I was like, no, never. And they looked at me like I was nuts. Why would you never go to the United Arab Emirates? Look how many Israelis are going there. And I said, if Israelis are suicidal, if there are suicidal Israelis who want to run to the United Arab Emirates, they can feel free to do that. People have the right to do whatever they want. But why would I want to go to a country that for the last 60 years refused to recognize my country and helped fund terror? It seems inconceivable to me that this is something that I would want to do. Yet many people do it. And look, I'm not criticizing people who decide to run to Arab countries that have signed peace treaties with Israel. You want to run there and you want to take your life in your own hand, you could do that. That's your prerogative as people. You have every right to do whatever you want to do. I'm just saying I wouldn't personally do it because I think that it's not a smart thing to do. I think that putting your life in danger intentionally is not really something that I choose to do. But if you choose to do that, go ahead. And so every time we have a hostage taking, every time we have a deal, it just seems that Israel becomes weaker and weaker. Instead of becoming stronger and stronger, these deals are supposed to make Israel stronger and stronger. They're making Israel weaker and weaker. And this one here, waiting 45 days, 3 months, almost 2.5 months for what? So you could release 2,500 terrorists from your prison and get back hostages, most of them in body bags? It doesn't make any sense. And that's all I'm saying. It just makes no sense. Now, you could disagree with me, and that's fine. I have no issue with people disagreeing with me, and it happens all the time. And if you want to talk to me about this, you could feel free to email me, Howie at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, Howie@IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. If you can't remember that, just go to IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com and click on my profile. The email address is there. We'll be more than happy to talk to you about this. But that's the reality. The way I see it, that is the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation is now that anybody who wants to make a point against Israel, anybody who needs some kind of concession from Israel, anybody who wants to hold Israel accountable for anything or wants Israel to, could extort Israel by just stealing some citizens. I wish that would work the rest of the world. I mean, could we go to New York City and grab two babies off the street and then say, I want to release 52 terrorists. I'll return those two babies. If you release 52 terrorists, I'm holed up in some apartment in Brooklyn, and I will release these two babies if you release 52 serial killers. What do you think would happen in New York City? The American government wouldn't bow and say, oh, he has two babies. Let's talk about this. Let's put some killers back on the streets because he has two babies. They would send in every single law enforcement agency you could dream of, including the army, to free those two babies and kill me. That's what they would do. They wouldn't even think twice about it. The sharpshooters would be surrounding us. The SWAT teams from the FBI, the SWAT teams from the police, the SWAT teams from the National Guard would all be there. They would not release 52 serial killers. I would be dead before I even had a chance to ask them if they thought about it. Now, Israel spent a year trying to destroy Hamas. After letting them grow and grow and grow for 20 years, they decided they spent a year trying to destroy them and haven't been able to destroy Hamas. Because they've been too busy. And this is really the true reason on why Hamas hasn't been eradicated. Israel's been too busy trying to save civilians. And this is the issue. They don't get credit for that. Any other country in the world had an October 7th attack happened to any other country in the world, they would have obliterated any other country that attacked them. They wouldn't even have thought twice about it. Just think back to 9/11. Think back to America's reaction to the attack on the World Trade Centers. What did America do? They targeted three countries and destroyed the three countries. They killed thousands, hundreds of thousands of civilians, maybe even millions of civilians. They destroyed the countries, they destroyed the governments, they killed the leaders. And the world didn't say a peep because they understood that America had been significantly attacked and had every single right in the world to defend itself. The world recognized America's right to defense, to self-defense. Had Israel reacted the same way America reacted, launching an attack on Gaza the next day and wiping out anybody that they thought was part of Hamas, regardless of their civilians or perpetrators, the world would have probably condemned Israel, but not really as harshly as long drawn out war. Israel could have finished this off in 45 minutes. Instead, they drew it out for a year, allowing the propaganda machine to work its magic, allowing the enemies to sell the narrative that Israel was the bad guy, turning the victim into the oppressor. Dragging it out so long resulted in Israel having no choice but to drop to their knees, wave the white flag, and say, please return our people. We will release murderers. We will release terrorists. We will release killers. Please, just return our people. That's where we're at now. How does Israel come back from this? They can't. It's going to take a long time to build up credibility again. It's going to take a long time for terrorists to be afraid of Israel, because now they have nothing to be afraid of. Part of the deal is Israel's going to remove their soldiers from Gaza. They've already started removing soldiers from Gaza. And the more they remove their soldiers, the stronger Hamas is going to get. people of Gaza will see that Hamas beat Israel. And the Hamas leadership has been decimated, but there's another Sinwar running Hamas now. And he's going to live up to the promise that was made that Israel will experience October 7th over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. That was the promise Hamas made the day after October 7th, on October 8th, on television. They made that promise that Israel will experience October 7th over and over and over again. But now, before, on October 7th, 2023, Hamas had no idea how Israel would react to that kind of an attack. They had no idea what Israel would do if they took these hostages. But now they know. They know that if they take hostages, Israel will just get on their knees and beg them for them back and give them anything they ask for. They know that Israel is a weak country, politically weak, militarily weak, that Israel could not beat a urban terror group, that there was no way to defeat them. They know that Israel failed in this mission. And now they know how to manipulate Israel and how to play the game. Once you show your hand, the game of poker is over. And we're at that point. Now, this is not all doom and gloom, so I just want to express that this is not all doom and gloom. There is a happy point to this. Aside from the weakening of the Jewish state, the happy point is that we are saving lives and that the people are going to be reunited, the hostages are going to be reunited with their families, and these families will have their, and the hostages will stop being tortured in Hamas terror dungeons. So that's a plus. And the ceasefire, although it will be one-sided, as it always is, because Hamas will continue lobbing missiles indiscriminately into Israeli civilian populations, and the world's not going to care about that at all, the ceasefire will last for a week or two or three, and then fighting will resume, and the war will continue, and it will draw out another year, another 2 years. More people will die, and Israel won't reclaim its status as the strongest nation in the region. It will remain weak and pathetic. It's just such a sad statement. The Netanyahu government will fall. A new government will arise. And maybe that new government will be stronger. Maybe that new government will have better ideas. Maybe that new government will not be afraid of world pressure. Maybe that new government will fight and destroy Hamas and destroy the terror networks that are extorting Israel. Maybe that will happen. One could only hope and pray. But until then, let's just pray for the safety of the Israelis. Let's just pray that there are no more hostage takings. Let's just pray that the Israeli government steps up to the plate and protects its country. Let's pray for the soldiers that are leaving Gaza and the soldiers that are stuck there. Let's pray that the hostages that are still alive will come home safely and healthily. Let's pray that the families of the dead hostages will get closure. And let's pray that the country of Israel will rise from the ashes and become the great nation it's destined to be. I'm Howie Silberg. This is Political Hitman here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'll see you again next week. Thank you for joining me.